brought to you by Penguin.
Mort by Terry Pratchett, read by Tony Robinson. This is the bright candlelit room where the lifetimers are stored. Shelf upon shelf of them, squat hourglasses, one for every living person, pouring their fine sand from the future into the past. The accumulated hiss of the falling grains makes the room roar like the sea. This is the owner of the room, stalking through it with a preoccupied air. His name is Death. But not any death. This is the Death whose particular sphere of operations is, well, not a sphere at all, but the Discworld, which is flat and rides on the back of four giant elephants who stand on the shell of the enormous star turtle Great Atuin, and which is bounded by a waterfall that cascades endlessly into space. Scientists have calculated that the chance of anything so patently absurd actually existing are millions to one, but magicians have calculated that million to one chances crop up 9 times out of 10. Death clicks across the black and white tiled floor on toes of bone, muttering inside his cowl as his skeletal fingers count along the rows of busy hourglasses. Finally, he finds one that seems to satisfy him, carries it carefully across to the nearest candle, staring at the little point of reflected brilliance. Then the focus of his gaze dives onwards towards the blue-green magnificence of the disk itself, turning slowly under its tiny orbiting sun. Now it curves away towards the great mountain range called the Ram Tops, which some people say are the home of old, wild magic. Death blinks. Now he sees the octarine grass country on the slopes of the mountains. Now he sees a particular hillside. Now he sees a field. Now he sees a boy running. Now, in a voice like lead slabs being dropped on granite, he says, "Yes." There was no doubt that there was something in the soil of the octarine grass country. For example, it was one of the few places on the disk where plants produced reannual varieties. Reannuals are plants that grow backwards in time. You sow the seed this year and they grow last year. Mort's family specialised in distilling the wine from reannual grapes. These were very powerful and much sought after by fortune-tellers, since, of course, it enabled them to see the future. The only snag was that you got the hangover the morning before and had to drink a lot to get over it. It was unfortunate that the youngest son had about the same talent for horticulture that you would find in a dead starfish. It wasn't that he was unhelpful, but it was the kind of vague, cheerful helpfulness that men soon learn to dread. He was tall, red-haired and freckled, with the sort of body that seems to be only marginally under its owner's control. It appeared to have been built out of knees. On this particular day, it was hurtling across the high fields, waving its hands and yelling. Its father and uncle watched it disconsolately from the stone wall. "I did hear you got the place going up at your farm, Hamish," Mort's father, Lazek, said, looking sideways at his brother. "Ah, got an apprentice in, didn't I?" Hamish lied with rattlesnake speed. "Sorry, look, I've got nothing against young Mort. He's a nice boy."
I know," said Lazek. He couldn't find his arse with both hands.
They stared at the distant figure. It had fallen over.
"He's not stupid, mind," said Hamish.
"There's a brain there, all right," Lazek conceded. "Sometimes he starts thinking so hard you has to hit him round the head to get his attention. His granny taught him to read, see? I reckon it overheated his mind."
Hamish scratched his chin thoughtfully.
"It could be someone else's problem."
"How do you mean?" Lazek asked slowly.
"There's the hiring fair at Sheepbridge next week. You set him as apprentice, see, and his new master'll have the job of knocking him into shape."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?